And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Mikkel Claire Nissen about his book, Manipulism and the Weapon of Guilt, Collectivism Exposed. And we're trying to get deep into the root of not only Danish society, but also, of course, Scandinavian society overall. We were kind of leaving off here on the Jantelag a little bit, a kind of a set of 10 rules. I think originally coming out of Denmark, I think it was one Danish author that kind of composed them all, that really emphasized the description of the unwritten rules of Scandinavian culture and society. What do you think our listeners should know about that Jantelag, where it comes from, and how it has been so successfully implemented within the Nordic countries?
Well, first of all, the Jantelag is not what it really is. The Jantelag was but a description on observations that Axel Sendemose did in I think the early 30s, and he described certain ways he observed. But you have to understand that narcissism was not a subject then. People didn't understand much, you know, psychology, etc. But his observations basically, you know, observed the forming of this the Scandinavian sect, and so because of his description, this hit. You know, all of Scandinavia and all Scandinavians today know what the Jantelag is, except they don't really know what the Jantelag is, because the Jantelag is a phenomena which is referred to in psychology as malignant narcissism, as in other words, very evil or evil narcissism, which is a phenomena that occurs out of two narcissistic tendencies. One is envy and the other one's arrogance. When you... You would have met in Scandinavia quite often. I'm pretty sure you would relate to this when I'm saying this. You know, the type of person that uses scorn. I don't need to feel good, you know, et cetera. I don't need to feel better than other people. This is scorn. They're basically denigrating or trying to subdue someone else by pretending that they don't want to be as good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in that process, they're subduing. And then you have the arrogant side, which is always the, you're an idiot, which is always projection, et cetera. So out of those, and that forms, there's a lot to this, of course. But this phenomena does not occur unless you are driven by severe psychopathic narcissism. But we could get into the fact that, so a lot of people are always... under the assumption that I use the term manipulism in my book, because, you know, I'm supposed to define socialism as manipulism, even though it is. But I had, in order to explain to people how this phenomena occurs and how they do subjugate people, I had to explain and therefore come up with the social psychological theory. And I should state the fact that this theory is not... Does not just apply to socialism itself. It does apply to any form of subjugation. I use a couple of examples in my book where I'm trying to explain how you know, manipulism is used in the family when you know the husband or boyfriend subjugates the female. It could be the other way around too, but it's usually only emotional aware of. If it's the male subjugating the female, it's often both emotional and physically. So, you know, by subjugating, but if we only take the side that most people, you know, try or endure in Scandinavia, which is the emotional or part, which is called ambient abuse. You know, I had to explain how this whole thing occurs, and one has to understand that, you know, it to simplify this, I would have to say, if I called someone an idiot 50 times a day for 10 days, just 10 days, they would feel like a dead fish in the sea quite quickly. You know, words are extremely powerful. So I needed to explain, you know, how the Jantelag really works. So let me just state how the theory of manipulism, how the theory of manipulism works and how this is all done in just a few sentences.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Well, it sounds as follows. To lower self-esteem, consequently generating feelings of inferiority and dependency, subjectively destroying independence, to thereby facilitate complete intellectual control with fictive contentment. And one could use an example of most people that have watched the TV series Cops must have, you know, ran across an example where the police comes out and, you know, the husband beat up the wife, etc. And they're about to they've arrested the husband and are about to take him away and you know, in the cop car, etc. And so the female will start, you know, feeling, you know, and this is what I refer to as the weapon of guilt. She's subjugated and she's dependent on this individual. And so this is what I refer to as the, you know, the fictive contentment that she finds in him. And so she will fend for him and often, you know, start, you know, crying and don't take him along, et cetera. I didn't mean that, et cetera,
yeah.
Because she's simply subjugated. And this is actually where I take this whole thing a bit further. It's the same process that happens in Scandinavia, which is also the reason why, you know, people in Scandinavia or in any sect, a good example was the Waco, Texas, if you know that example, where when people were asked, you know, et cetera, they looked like they were the happiest people in the world. But as soon as they had the chance, the three or four people that left the sect, the truth came out. But as, within the sect, they made that, pretended like they were happy. And it's the same exact thing, you know, if we get back to the question you asked earlier in the show about why people, you know, have this imaginary idea that they're happy.
Yeah,
because
right.
everything else proves otherwise. Let's move on. What happened to me and the reason why this whole thing came together and the whole, we could say, puzzle, you know, suddenly just, it just fit perfectly, was the fact that I moved to America and I started observing the fact that these people were like me. And even though I was promoting socialism, I always acted like these people. I was always open. I always found it weird that I couldn't have a conversation with someone at the bus stop, etc. And
yeah.
Suddenly I found a country in the world where people acted openly. You know, and most curiously, they have guns, they have et cetera, they have crime, way higher crime than we ever have, et cetera. Yet they were not afraid.
Right.
They were not afraid. And you had these open people, helpful. They held the door. There was still gentlemen was something. If you try to open
exactly.
the door, if you hold the door for a female lady in Denmark, I mean, they will get angry.
Exactly.
You know. You're so feminine. They're not even, they're so masculine
exactly.
that you can't even hold the door open and it will offend them.
Well, the gifts of state feminism and state education when it comes to state feminism as well, that is this kind of, I've tried to liken it to kind of an ant society, at least in Sweden. That's the best I can describe it. It's really, some people mistake it for individualism, but it isn't, because the people are literally, they're like a hive. They're working in the same goal to run society in the way they're doing it. But you literally have like ants that can like step over each other to get their goals achieved. But you don't get here you go, you're welcome, you know, nothing back. It's just it's an ant mentality. That's how I see it.
The curious thing is that actually that these people think that they're individuals. And you can't find people in the world. I'd even go to China and believe that they're more individual than in Scandinavia, because the subjugation is not. And this is one thing, we should get back to what we just spoke about. But I'll actually take you this a little bit further, because if you look at the school system in Denmark, there are no schools for talent. No whatsoever.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Everyone is supposed to be equal. Okay,
yep, that's right.
We have achieved what I refer to as neo-communism, a democratic, or at what I refer to as neo-communism is the definition of a society that has moved so far left-wing that it doesn't have a right wing anymore, except on the left, of course. But it's achieved through democracy. Okay, and this is what I refer to as neo-communism because. As you said yourself, the political parties are all there. They make the illusion that you have a choice. Well, where's my choice?
Yeah.
I don't have no freedom.
That's right.
So, but if you look at, and it's the same in Sweden, people dress the same, they look the same, they eat the same, they say the same stupid phrases. I don't know if it's the newest trend in Sweden too, to implement one English word in every sentence you can come up with, and then you sound cool. If you go to schools, they're not about intellectuals anymore. It's about being able to knowing specific words, etc. It's not about knowing the fact that economics within socialism is a hoax. It's BULLSSRT. If you come up with something like that, it's all about sounding intellectual, sounding clever, but cleverness is held down. But the curious thing where I wanted to get back to is the fact that we don't have schools of intellectual. We don't have something that goes out and say, oh my God, we just found this girl and she is extremely talented. She is a genius in math.
Let's lift her up to the heights that we can, right?
Yeah. Let's use this ability best we can,
right?
Nope. They have that in China. They have that in China because the subjugation in China is held from actual fear, coercive coercion of fear from the government. If you talk against us, we will execute you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It's not that easy anymore. They are lifting because the subjugation is. And I think within our lifetime, you will see democracy in China. It will fail. I think the life circle of any, and I don't care which, any type of socialist society is about a cycle of about 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at China, it's quite correct. What they had to do after about 70 years was they actually they opened up, they gave people a little more freedom, and I think it's all it's done is buying them a little more time.
Right.
So basically, of course, when people are completely subjugated, they get nothing. If you give them a little more food, of course, it's gonna. If you're completely brainwashed, as I said before, it's not the voodoo thing, but if you're brainwashed, it's gonna make you feel a little more free, and it will allow them a little more time, but it's not going to continue like that.
Yeah.
So basically what I am saying is that the difference between traditional socialism, which is China, Cuba, etc., is that the fear completely controls society, and so they can actually open up and allow people to be better. But because our system is completely run emotionally, we have to have this constant subjugation, this constant denigration of people. I mean, and the denigration has so many forms.
Yeah.
I mean, I gave my wife, ex-wife, I gave her, I came into the city in Copenhagen and I found two pairs of suede boots. Okay. And they were extremely expensive, but they're on sale. And one pair was extremely pink. Extremely pink, really, really, really extreme, like the Pink Panther, okay? And the other pair was as blue as our blue liberal side, you know? So I took that, I bought both pairs, and I switched over the shoes. So I gave her this pair of shoes where one was pink and the other one's blue.
Right.
And she couldn't even walk on the street without people turning around looking after her, you know?
Yeah.
Or every single person in this country would comment.
Yeah,
because it simply stood out too much.
You're breaking the mold. What are you attempting to do? Who do you think you are, etc.?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look at the trends. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I look at the trends. I don't know if you had the same trend in Sweden, where every single young boy walked around with a white belt. I mean,
right.
Exactly. I mean, isn't that funny? It traveled even as far as Sweden. I mean, they all have to look alike to feel, you know, accepted. And this is exactly what socialism uses against you.
Yeah.
This absolute need for acceptance. where I'm like, no, I don't need your acceptance. I need my acceptance. Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, if you tell me that I am this and that, I will always consider if I should, if I'm wrong. Of course. I mean, always be, you know, you can't get anything and you can't achieve anything unless you're self-critical and objective in regards to letting other people have an opinion. But if it's a denigrating opinion and if it's you're a bad person because you don't want to give me pay taxes, and I'm like, what? Excuse me, you're stealing. I mean, it's not something that I can. I'm not bad because of that. But no. I'm bad because I curse in your house because you don't like it, because it's your house. I disrespect your bubble or your sphere. Okay. Different subject. But let's move on again.
Let me just comment on that quickly, if you will, Mikkel.
Mm-hmm,
just
sure.
The conformity is pathological. That's what we're trying to get to.
Absolutely.
Here. And the very idea that the egalitarian sentiments is the new religion, basically. And I mean, you get the standard, you know, replies all the time, the defense of the system. Well, you know, at least it's not as bad as in this country or that country. You know, in Denmark, school is free healthcare. You know, of course, there's no such thing as free, as those who study economics for 1 second realize. But nonetheless, that's what you get kind of in your face. And there's no admission to the fact of how the basic structure of society works. So it's a rudimentary understanding of it. But the defense of it is as rigid as anything you would encounter.
But it also implies exactly what everyone, you know, what I'm trying to explain to people. What is the first thing that people, you know, will reply with if you ask them why they're happy? Well, I bought a sofa. Or this is free and I get this and I get that. It's not, oh, okay, I am so freaking happy. You know what? I have great kids, I love the forest, or you know what, we take care of our country. When Danish people have great people and they're good friends. No, it's always something fictive. It's always fictive.
And as the sound of it, material as well, which is also kind of a double standard when you think about some of the socialist ideologies, right? It's about moving beyond those kinds of perimeters. Although it isn't really, right? Because the whole structure is based around. We could see this kind of with the building of some of the, in Sweden, we called it the Million Program. It was these high rises that went up. The Sweden government, centralized government, said everyone has to live in a higher form of standard now. So now they knocked down the old beautiful wooden houses and built these mega ugly buildings, you know, shoeboxes stacked on top of each other, and said, there you go. You know, now we've brought you, higher standard and luxury kind of thing. But although no one asked for it and people actually took their own life because of the fact that their hometown and their home neighborhoods were destroyed and these new ugly things went up there. So it's about that material, again, comfort in the fact that it's about the safety and security. But what they don't understand is that when people are not left to their own devices and make their own choices, when they're not there to be the masters of their own life, this will create a pathology within the human being, which I think has led to the situation that we're in now that you're describing.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole puzzle is humongous. I mean, it's big. It's not just, you know, you're onto the actual subject itself. That's for sure. But there's just, and you know, when I'm being interviewed on these matters, I find it so hard because it's impossible. You could talk for 2 hours and I still haven't even, you know,
begun scraping the surface of it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It there is so much to it. All I can say to people, it's narcissism. It is all about narcissism. It is all about that, you know, and the curious thing about narcissism is that if you're subject to a narcissist, you will become subjugated regardless. I don't care how strong you are. If you don't understand what to look for, they will subjugate you and they will win. And that's just how it is, because we're talking about the strongest type of psychopathy. The people driven by psychopathy it took me many years to understand the whole thing. But I mean, and as I said earlier in the show, it all started in myself. You cannot achieve freedom until you have achieved it within yourself. And I haven't even achieved it myself completely.
Right.
I mean, I understand it, but it doesn't mean I'm not coerced. I use a social experiment in my book where, and this is something that most people who might listen to this show in America might have a little laugh at, because it would never be able to, you know, you could never do this experiment or this social experiment in a country like America, because it's still individualism, even though they're in trouble. But if you go to the supermarket tomorrow and you shop your groceries and you go up to that conveyor belt at the cash register and you put your groceries on that conveyor belt, and then you're supposed to not take that triangle, that thing, that little divider that is supposed to divide your groceries from the next customers. If you don't put it on, and I'll bet you 100 in Sweden, people will go berserk too. Crazy. You know what I mean? Because and this is all about entitlement. And when I'm talking about why this society is driven and run by not norms, but severe entitlement, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Or you could even take it further, what I refer to, because we have, and most people coerce by saying, oh, these right wingers, they're egoists. And I'm like, whoa, thank you. I'm that's a compliment. You know, I'm an egoist. No, but that's a compliment, because you're egocentric, okay? Sure. And the difference between being an egoist to prioritize me, so in the end I can become strong and make everyone around me strong too, you know, opposed to someone like you who's egocentric. In other words, someone who believes that anything they say or think or do also involves everyone else, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, to work with these emotions, we need to start using and experiment with ourselves. As I say to most people, you know, if you live in Scandinavia, you know, go to the store before you step in the door, you know, make up your mind that you are going to go shop. You're going to take your groceries. You're going to put them on the conveyor belt, and you're not going to put that thing on. And then you're going to feel within yourself emotions. And even I with 12 years of psychology behind me, okay, I get ashamed, or not ashamed, I feel guilt.
So that's the power of the collective there. That's it's the programming of sorts within yourself. And it's funny, because you described this one of the most basic, just rudimentary, you know, everyday, you know, life kind of little things that occur, right? But that's really what's about. It's about the obedience to the societal structure. That isn't really, it's nothing that's written on paper that you get, you know, mailed to you exactly. When you're 15 years old.
I signed no contract.
Exactly. Yet it's there. It's a social contract of sorts, if you will. And if you break that, you'll feel goddamn quick of that you're stepping out of line, you know, and it can be the most minute little details.
And the curious thing about it is, as I explained, is that without even anyone saying anything, you might feel guilty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So even though if you done are lucky enough to be one of those type of people that don't feel guilty, that person behind you in the queue will most likely, you know, put that divider, that triangle, you know, roughly on the conveyor belt, or they might push you a little with their arm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these kind of things, because they can talk without even speaking.
Yep, you know? That's right.
And there's so much to this whole thing. But you know what? I really want to jump back to the fact that I was trying to explain. So we went through the thing about how you know, the subjugation is so intense and so, you know, forthgoing, you know, continually in Scandinavia, where I think it's a little more, you know, open, because the coercion is on top in China, because they're simply told, if you do anything up, we're going to put you right, you know?
Yeah.
So here, the society will need to keep you down. But the main point was, I moved to America. I've lived over there, you know, about 6 years, all in all. But what really woke me up was two things. One was a personal thing, a personal family member whom I'm not going to talk about ever. This person could do certain things to me that I had never tried before. And eventually I started having and I've always been interested in myself. I've always been interested in psychology. And the internet was starting to pop up, and Wikipedia came out, and all this stuff, you know. And I started researching. And eventually I came up with the fact that and there was no doubt that this person was suffering from narcissistic personality disorder, which is, by the way, what I am proposing that about, or at least up to 70% of the people in my country suffer from that disorder.
Yeah.
Opposed to in America, which, you know, I think it's a bit higher, probably about 5% because of the left, the way that moves right now in America. But, you know, according to statistics, it's under 1% in America. And I'm saying 70. So you wow. can see what we're in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but the main point was that I moved to Australia after this. And what really woke me up and put this puzzle right was the fact that they had the end of law too. They had the end of law. And
right.
I was brainwashed, or, you know, I was, you know, told my whole life that the Yentl-Law was this, you know, redneck, you know, thing, you know, whatever. It was this, it's old customs. We have had it, whatever, so many years and blah, blah, blah in Scandinavia. And it was a traditional way and farmer kind of culture that came from in Scandinavia. I was like, what? I mean, come on, this country is 200 years old. And suddenly you have the same thing.
Yeah.
And I started researching and realized eventually that, you know, it was that phenomena which is occurring when you are driven by severe psychopathic narcissism, also known as narcissistic personality disorder, also known as or the phenomena of the end of law was what we refer to in psychology as malignant narcissism.
Right.
And you know, it I started putting the puzzles together a little earlier in Australia, but it wasn't, you know, it was just research. And then I came back to Denmark and I was like, oh my God, these people are crazy. I mean, they're not normal. This is not a normal society. Something is severely wrong here. I mean, even in Australia, I could still talk to people in the street, you know, it wasn't, there was still something that just a tint of liberalism, you know, you know, it's so, you know, and I just said to myself, I'm not going to put up with this. And I, for every day that went by, I got more and more angry. I mean, you know, as I say to most people, it's like, what would you do? What would you do if one day you woke up and you found out you had been sold the biggest hoax in history?
Right.
Ever?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming there's others. There are others, but
sure. Yeah.
You know, but I lived this and, you know, I was told this big thing and I was even, you know, brainwashed enough to walk around believing in it myself, even though everything was telling me otherwise, you know, so,
right.
So, I mean, I'm not different from anyone else. I mean, I've always, when I have a debate with people, you know, especially, you know, people that are socialist, et cetera, I'm like, everything I tell in my book, you know, I used to be you. I used to be like you.
Yeah.
And,
go ahead. Finish that point.
Well, yeah, I was just going to refer to the fact that it sounded like you've been stuck there too. And at some point in time, people start waking up.
Yeah.
And it really hurts waking up because it starts. It's an emotional process where you're like, whoa, oh my God! I mean, you. It's not like okay, if they just freed everyone in China, it would be different because then you would just suddenly one day liberated. But here, it's an emotional liberation. And you realize that you've been subjugated and what do you call it, beat emotionally every day of your life.
Definitely, yeah.
In numerous ways.
And it's the discovery of the tyranny. It's not the release of it. It's rather you can now see its intricate components. You know, it's literally like unplugging from that matrix and realize that, oh, Jesus, what's going on here? And is anybody around me even awake? Do they even realize what's going on here? So let's talk a little bit about how you, because one thing that's going on in Sweden right now, I don't know if it's the same in Denmark, for example, homeschooling is verboten, right? You're not allowed to homeschool your own children. It's the government officially said that they are afraid of the bias of the parents being passed on to the onto the children. So it's meant to be in the hands of state-educated professionals that are to do good little ant soldiers out of every little Scandinavian child or a Swedish child that grows up. Tell us how you bring up your children as a way of trying to deprogram and trying to, you know, disconnect from the system. What can be done here?
Well, first of all, I try to do a counter defense because I don't want to brainwash my children. I don't think one type of brainwash dishwashing is appropriate versus another brainwashing.
Of course not. No.
So what I do is I work with their emotions, and I try to basically create an emotional self within my children, a positive ego. So there is no way that they can become subjugated. Well, of course they can. Everyone can become subjugated, but they will always defend themselves in this matter. I mean, one way, and I'll give you an example of how I create what I refer to as benign envy, positive envy in my children. They're very young. My oldest is only 8 years old. So there's, you know, levels of how far you can go. But one thing is I always say to my daughter, and I usually use this when I'm among people that come over as friends, etc., and we talk these kind of things. And I say, so what do you do if you meet someone who's better than you? And my daughter would instantly reply, I will listen. And then I ask, so why do you listen? And she would say, well, because then I can be just as good or even better, you know. And this is a weapon, in my opinion, against the Yentl law, because the Yentl law is the opposite. It's the exact opposite. I'm taking the example from America, where where people are like, oh, that's good, man. Oh, my God, I saw that, you know. So a good example is if you see someone in the street who has a Ferrari, you know, you run there the quickest you can, you know, not because he has a beautiful Ferrari, but because the person that has a Ferrari must know something that you would want to know so you could achieve the same.
Right. Yeah.
So this is the whole subject of benign envy. Oh my God, this guy knows something. I would want to know, even though the guy might be an idiot. Who cares? I mean, I'd rather listen to an idiot for half an hour than risking not to talk to someone who is actually not an idiot. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
So the whole point of turning this into, you know, taking your envy and just you know turning it into something positive so you can achieve same goals.
Aspire for something greater
and
recognizing those differences. Otherwise, you're in the territory of crab mentality, right? Describing the way of thinking is, if I can't have it, neither can you. It's that metaphor that, you know, if you have a pot of crabs individually, the crabs could kind of escape from the pot, right? But instead, they grab each other, you know, and this kind of king of the hill competition, which actually prevents anybody from escaping and ensuring their collective demise instead. That's what it's about, right?
Mm, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you another example in this whole, you know, trying to change their ego. One will have to understand that, and you would definitely, you know, you would understand this example too. If you look at Swedish people, you know, even get to get a normal, any Swedish person, even yourself, I don't know, but we've been taught from childhood or brainwashed from childhood, you know, through propaganda, etc., not to self-encourage.
Right. Ever. Yeah.
So the fact to meet someone from Scandinavia who says, I am good at, you know, it's next to never, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what I have done, okay, first of all, this is basically the start of it all. So to achieve the sect, and I don't care where you go in the world, and this is actually something, a subject I'm working on right now in the new book. When you work with the sect, first of all, the sect will have to take away your ability to create self-esteem. The sect will need to create your esteem. So in other words, by basically taking away your ability to say, I'm good at something, you have destroyed the ability for that individual to be an individual, achieve their own independent personal esteem. And what then happens is when you start suffering from low self-esteem, well, then you start needing, and this is why I'm talking about how children are so good. I mean, it's so great to look at children. If you want to look at socialists, just look at children. It's the same thing, because they always come to you, and, you know, my daughter comes running to me, and they're like, daddy, have you seen my drawing? Isn't it beautiful? You know? Right. It's the same as socialist. Oh, affirm me, affirm me, affirm me. Tell me I'm good at this. Tell me I'm good at that. You know? And it's the same thing. It's like little children.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I do with my children then is that when they come with that drawing, of course, we're talking about little children. If they were 16 years old, it would be different. But when they're 6 or 8, of course, I say, oh, yeah, it's a beautiful drawing. But what's important? Is it important that daddy thinks the drawing is great or beautiful? Or is it important that you think it's great or beautiful?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then their choice, and slowly, of course, you make them understand that they need to find that, you know, that achievement, that encouragement from themselves. It's not that I don't want to encourage them, but that encouragement needs to come from within. So basically what I'm saying is that first the sect will take away your ability to encourage yourself. When that encouragement is gone, you will then start slowly, of course, you're denigrated simultaneously by society. And because of that, you get low self-esteem. When low self-esteem occurs, you will now need adoration. You will now need people to affirm you. And because this can be done in different ways. Of course, you know, we have the nationalism. I'm the best, you know. You can never say you can never say I'm the best, but you can say Denmark is the best. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So now we have this unity. Now we have this collectivism, you know, or the class is the best in the whole world, or all my friends are the best, you know, this kind of thing you can talk, but never me as an individual. You can't say that.
That's right.
So because people will need to have this affirmation from the outside, basically society now decides the level of esteem that you have. And this is the whole game behind this. So basically what I'm doing is I'm teaching my children to find that achievement from within. And on top, of course, I teach people that it's so important to understand the difference between, you know, healthy narcissism versus negative narcissism. Because healthy narcissism, I am very good at writing books. And I can promise you, I have just written a book. And it's a great book, and you should read it, and I'll even give it to you for free. That is self-encouragement, and that has nothing to do with negative narcissism.
Sure, yeah.
But if I am saying I am the best at writing books in the whole world, I have now compared myself to anyone else. You understand?
Yep.
Or I am better at writing books than you. Now it's arrogance, and now it's unhealthy narcissism. And this is the type of thing that socialists will take away from you. As soon as you self-encourage in any way, they will call you arrogant. But then you can start using the tools of asking them what arrogance is. And I'll give you 100%. They don't know how to describe it. So this is what's so curious about the whole game. You need to understand the tools that they use against you, of course, and then use it against themselves, and then you're told you're an idiot, but that's always how it is. It's the best argument they can always come up with, and that's how it is working with children. So
interesting. I want to reemphasize that point as well, that there's no one is special, right? No one is different. There is not any winners, because no one is a loser, right? There are no boundaries for the children who needs them at a certain time in their life to test these boundaries, to realize, you know, to develop to the stages that we talked about. Otherwise, they are in a state of arrested development, and they literally become grown-up children, and that's what we're kind of dealing with. So that there needs to be a different level of encouragement as well. I thought that was what diversity was all about, right? Actually recognizing the difference. But what we're seeing in these, where we have pathological altruism and pathological egalitarianism, we see an erosion of those of that which would create diversity. It's a kind of a creation of a monoculture, and no one is different, no one is better. You know, this is of course even true within the sense of economics within the country, right? No matter how hard you work, you're not going to make that much more money, if anything at all, actually, which takes away the incentive, which takes away. You know, the creation of services, the creation of ideas. And I mean, we have so many people leaving the Scandinavian countries. I specifically know Sweden, that a lot of the entrepreneurs they can't take the society because it's so difficult and so hard for the individual to achieve something, and they see nothing for it, right? So they take off, you know, and the country at large are losing those people and those business opportunities. So they're shooting themselves in the foot, you know?
And I so wish that people wouldn't succumb to this. People need to stay and fight.
Yeah.
I mean, they really need to, because it's my Scandinavia too.
Of course it is.
And when people tell me this, you know, this kind of thing, even this afternoon, some lady, you know, in a place, I had a short debate, and of course she looked at me and said, "Why are you here?" You know, like, yeah, I always do. It's the same argument every time. And I said, "I'm here because it's hilarious to be around people. They say the same thing, eat the same thing, do the same thing, etc." You know, it's an amazing thing to be around people that you can predict every time they just open their mouth. I mean, you can go to a party, you go to a friend's house, and you can scripture exactly what the whole evening is going to look like. I mean, it's a joke. We don't live a life anymore. It's as you said, it's a matrix. It's like a programming.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
It is crazy, and it's a very worrying, and I think as well, what about life lessons in all this for the development of human beings? We need a certain set of experiences. We need to have hardship. We need to be challenged. We need to be knocked around now and then. We need to make some huge mistakes. But the very structure of society built around the idea of safety and security kind of inhibits people to develop these different traits, because everything is aimed towards not necessarily comfort, but this idea that you're protected in a bubble and nothing is ever going to happen to you. What kind of human being is going to grow out of that? How is that human being going to be developed? Are they going to be limited in their abilities?
Yeah, but that's exactly the point where you know, not only that what you're saying, but there's also the whole thing about denigration where you're held back. So you're just stuck in a hole. You'd never get anywhere from there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an awful society we live in, and but I can promise you, and I can promise you to anyone out there that are listening, this is not going to continue. I mean, it can't. There's no way. I mean, the hoax is not, this illusion of freedom is not going to continue, because I mean, at some point they're going to run out of, you know, money. I mean, I don't know what the national debt is in Sweden, but I mean, you know, that I've said to so many people out there that the only reason why we've been able to achieve what we've achieved in Scandinavia, or what they've achieved, is because of this big, humongous wheel called America, and because of this economy now breaking and starting to completely dissolve. If it happens and America goes bankrupt completely, well, it's going to completely affect the whole world. And so we're going to be in a big doo-doo, and they can't buy people anymore, or their opinion, as you know, so they can't give them their entitlements anymore. And so the whole puzzle will fall apart.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think we have about 1,211 billion Swedish crowns in national debt right now.
Oh, that's crazy. But the funny thing about it is that I never signed a document that said I owe any money away to anyone. I don't owe anyone money, but some people decided that I do.
Yeah.
Just because I live in a country. I mean, you know, the joke about this whole thing is that when a Danish child is born, they have a debt the second they come out of their mom of 130,000 Danish kroners.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, that's your debt. I'm like, what? I'm not even born, man. What's up? it's crazy. I mean, and these people don't figure. I can understand it, because when I look back and I always try to look back and try to put myself in that role of where they are right now. I mean, I think the main point is that you don't think, you don't grasp, there's no questioning anything. You just live.
Yeah.
You just go with the flow. And it's a pity, because there's so many things happening around us. And I think it's important. I think most important in this whole conversation is to encourage people out there to try to bend the these so-called norms. They're not norms, but entitlement, you know, ways of entitlement that runs our society, and start encouraging people. You know, come on, you can do that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I am good at this, you know, and they call you arrogant. I'm like, no, I'm not arrogant. I did not say I was better at this than you. I said I was good. I defined me and what I can do. If you find me arrogant, find another friend. Farewell.
Yeah.
I mean, it 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 is about budging. It is about saying, I am not going to play your game anymore. And yeah, of course, a lot of us are going to sit here, and I'm not going to sit here and tell people that it's easy, because I've lost basically all of my friends, all of my family. And
horrible. Absolutely horrible.
My uncle removed me from Facebook just a couple months ago, never even told me anything whatsoever. I mean, and I never had a debate with the person. Never.
Right.
Not one debate. He simply removed me because I post what I post. You know
well,
what I mean?
That means that the experiment, the political laboratory that is the North, is such a tremendous success when you're even willing. And I've spoken to people like this too. They literally are willing to turn their backs on their own family, on their own friends, for the sake of the protection of the society.
But that is the agenda.
Exactly,
that is
yes.
The agenda, and I'm not going to go into an agenda 21 or whatever. because I don't care much about what people sit there and write. It's just what I acknowledge. But the fact is, and there is no question about the fact that this system is supposed, and this is exactly what you got into just earlier in the show, the fact that they have now taken away your ability to homeschool your children.
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to split the family.
Yeah.
They're supposed to destroy the family. So that the strongest form of collectivism which is ever achieved, which is the family, it needs to become this new collectivism. You need to become parented by society. And it is not, we're not looking at socialism anymore. We are looking at new way of communism. It is a completely new way. And it will only move in that direction if there are not enough people like you and I.
Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, I heard this literally outspoken. There are a couple of authors that they wheel out now and again to kind of explain, like to the British audience or stuff like that, about the Scandinavian country and Sweden in particular. And they were basically outspoken about this, that it's, well, you know, it's more kind of like, it's you and the state kind of thing. It's not really, you know, the family at large. It's like, we're all a big family. But then you realize that it's a family which is contrived of, you know, cloned robots, basically, with an ant mentality.
Isn't it funny that these people have a mentality, an illusion, where they call themselves a family, and especially under a flag, and they're so proud of their flag, etc. And what's curious about it is that if someone is beaten in the middle of the street, and he's an Arab or you know ethnic you know descent in the middle of Sweden, every single Arab friend will come to his rescue. But if a Danish person is beaten up in the middle of the street by a Danish person, everyone will start and look.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, come on, look at our culture. We are weaklings.
Yeah.
We are not Vikings anymore.
No.
We are weaklings.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's not a unity. It is unity for one single thing. It is a unity of people that have infiltrated the democracy or the government and utilize the power of democracy to say that we are the rulers because we are the minority and we can use that against you to steal. I mean, I have a good argument against this whole thing where people say that democracy is a good thing. And I say, fine, democracy can exist and it can work fine if you have a constitution that states that you cannot use the democracy to impose on anyone else's freedom, you know? So, you know, basically, but I usually say when people come with this, oh, but it's democracy. And I said, okay, so if 51% of the Danish people came up with the idea that now they wanted to create a law where all it was legal to rape women, a law that stated that you were allowed to rape women and there was 51%, well, that would be democracy. And so do you think that it would be okay to use democracy to allow this to continue?
Mm-hmm.
And any sane person would say no. And I usually say, well, why do you think that it's okay to use democracy to rape me for my money then?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's just it's a myopic viewpoint where they don't really realize where they're at. And because it lacks a self-examination. You don't really have philosophy to that extent. It's not really thinking and contemplating about the life you live. It's just like you said before, the yellow lines are drawn out right in the road. You know exactly where to walk, where to go to do this and that. It's organized and it's very nice and tidy in that regard, but it's starting to crumble though. I mean, because just as you said before, you can't keep up. And the other point you mentioned, which is tremendously important, which is this idea that there's no sense of brotherhood or sisterhood anymore. The folk identity is removed and it's been supplanted by this kind of superficial or artificial pride. You know, as you said, when you're abroad, you can say how proud you are of being Danish or whatever, or Swedish. But once when you come back to it, and if you end up in a situation where it really matters, nothing of that even exists. That has definitely been an agenda in Sweden for a long time, of just eroding the sense of your, you know, belonging and your brotherhood to your surrounding of your people. And it's horrible.
Try to look at, remember, the 80s, the 90s, the 80s, when there was still the Russia, the former Russia, right? When you looked at, or before the Iron Curtain went down, you could say so. Remember when we had the Olympics and how you had this these geniuses, these athletics, etc., and they were so extremely good. But it's so curious. And when you look at the way that people think, because as you said again, it's like one person's achievement is everyone's. It's like, right. You know, it's really curious, because when Olympics go on, and it's the exact same feeling that people try to create in China or in the former, you know, before the, you know, in Russia, it's the same thing that goes on here. It just recently when we had the Olympics, you know, we had the Danish, what do you call it, long, their boat race, whatever, there are eight people. I don't remember what those races are called. Doesn't matter. But we, I think we won. Right. And I remember this guy came over to me and he was like, oh, we won. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, and he felt like he had rowed that boat. You know, I was like, yeah, dude, there are eight guys who did that. It has nothing to do with Denmark. It's just under a flag. Yeah. Come on. I mean, it's not like just because a boxer is good at something that has anything to do with the whole nation. I mean, this whole unity, because they have no esteem, and the only way they can create esteem is this fictive esteem through, oh, I am Danish and this guy won rowing.
Cool. Yeah, and that's about it. That's where it begins and ends, you know. And this mentality that you didn't really build that. Nothing is really belong to. There is no such a thing as an individual achievement. Or even if you did do something on your own, it's probably a way that you cheated, or you kind of you did something wrong to end up in that situation. You know what I mean?
Yep, I absolutely agree.
It's absolutely horrible. But, you know, nonetheless, all the things we've been talking about, I think it's very encouraging that people like yourselves are just beginning to speak out about all of this, trying to awaken some of our fellow Scandinavian brethren and sisters out there to try to make them realize and think about the situation that they're in, and why do you by default defend the structure around you when you probably even haven't really examined them. You haven't really thought about it. It's just there. It's been part of your component ever since you grew up, and it's just you're running on automatic, you know. So is there anything else you want to mention about how people can break out of the hypnosis, out of the collectivist trance? And also, actually, to that extent, would you mind speaking a little bit more about how you see this coming into America right now, threatening the U.S.?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, you see that narcissism is an epidemic, which is basically worldwide. It's very unfortunate to see that, you know, the country that I visited, you know, first time when I was 18, which is more than 20 years ago. I see this country turning into the same, we could call it gentilhomme, or malignant narcissism, taking over. I mean, you go debate with liberals in America, and you see the same thing. It's the same debate. As soon as they don't have any, you know, way of battling you verbally, then you're an idiot. It's always, you know, it's always the same kind of thing, and it's unfortunately turning into a worldwide sect. And I unfortunately see that the fight that most people can do best, and the best way we can fight this, is actually not within Scandinavia, because it's there and you can't do much about it. You need to let people wake up themselves. You can't change them.
Yeah.
You can't change them. It's a personal process, and it doesn't matter how hard you knock them with that baseball bat. It's not going to help them, because it's either you want to get, you know, either you want to understand you're in prison or you don't. You know,
it has to be a spark within that person from the beginning, an interest. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So I, as I say to most people, is that, if you want to really make a difference, you know, understand that the last place in the world where we really have freedom, and I'm not talking freedom to people in the same sense that most others do, because I am talking about, I know that America is full of laws. I know that America is being turned into an awful society. I know a lot of things of what, you know, what's going on in America, but the attitude, the whole personality of the American is the personality that runs freedom. And if that personality is lost, we have lost to the left.
Mm. Yep. All right. Let's have people think about this for a little bit. And as we begin to wrap things up here for this time, Mikkel, I've been enjoying having you on. It was very, very interesting to talk more about the book. And of course, there a number of things in the book that we didn't even have time to brush on. So I do recommend people getting a copy of it. And of course, there's a number of ways they can do that. One is, of course, buying it through Amazon. They can go to your website, manipulism.com, or they can connect with you on Facebook as well to get a copy of the book. So what are you working on next here? And what's the timeline on that then, do you think?
I'm hoping to have the next book out before before the American election 2016. Let's hope they know that the American government does not go into a kind of war or something crazy, so Obama, so he can come up with an excuse to stay in office for a little longer, whatever he's going to do. I mean, the man is crazy, and they're, you know. But I'd really like to see people, and especially Scandinavians, because we off you. And I think if you're out there and you feel the same way as everyone else, because the curious thing is that there are lots of people like you and I out there. There are lots of people out there that just need tools to work with to understand that they're not in the wrong. Okay, but yeah. You cannot, if you cannot put words on it, if you cannot understand what it is you're up against, because it's invisible, it's emotional. And because it is emotional, you can't just fight it without the tools that, you know, I've sat down and spent over 6 years on trying to put on paper. So, you know, I encourage people, friend me on Facebook. If you can find me, my name is Mikkel Klernissen. You know, search my name on Facebook, you know, friend me. I accept all friend requests, and I will gladly give you my book for free. It is not about money. This whole thing is about, you know, liberating, you know, the people out there that feel the same way that I used to do and in a sense still do. You know, it is a lonely place to live in Scandinavia being liberated, you know.
Oh, yeah. So
even though we're becoming more, we need to unite.
Yeah.
And just like anybody else in collectivism uses what I refer to as psychology does, as narcissistic supply, we need the same thing. We need the encouragement. We need to involve ourselves with people that understand, you know, what individualism is, what it is to understand benign envy, what it is to get back to wisdom, philosophy, you know, someone who's better than you and try to achieve the same thing that they did through, you know, benign ways. We need to get back to where we were. I mean, Scandinavians are not bad people. They're just unfortunately subjugated by themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, I've talked about that with other guests before, but sometimes I feel that there's been a maybe the size of the countries as well. It's served very well as a political laboratory, smaller populations, smaller, you know, governments. Yep. In that regard, and it's been easier to kind of test things and implement things. But I do suspect, as I talked with Ingun about as well, that there has been a long-standing kind of rebellious attitude in these countries, and therefore I think it's been an objective to try to subjugate that and put a lid on that pretty early on in the process, because I dragged this many, many hundreds of years back into history of this process of the development of this type of society. There isn't I can't really find that's the initial point of it or whatnot, but I think it's important. Well said what you said, you know, stand up for individualism, reignite that spark of life really that this is about, and lift your head from the floor, you know, and start really paying attention, looking into things, interesting yourself for yourself. That's not a negative thing. So great. Yes. Well said, Mikkel. Is there anything else you want to leave us with here?
Yeah, no, there's not much. I think we covered most of it, at least what we could in the hour and a half. I mean, it's impossible to cover everything that there is to this game. I mean, there's nothing else to say that, you know, it's important that people unite and people like us unite. Without that unity, we are nothing, because, you know, people just sitting out there, you know, ending up in alcohol, et cetera, whatever, you know, they need to, you know, to survive emotionally in a society like this. People, you need to unite, and we can win this whole battle if we start showing a side of individualism that most people here are not used to. I mean, you know, it people in this type of the world, or in this side of the world, are not used to anyone who are in favor of freedom. It's impossible, because, as I said, and we spoke about earlier, the right wing here is not even a right wing. It is the right wing on the left wing. So what they're used to is basically the same type of people, except right wingers on the left wing are a little more economic, you know, responsible, but that's the only thing to it. They're still driven by severe narcissism, etc. So it's the whole same. So I can only encourage people out there and say, you know what, you're not alone. We are here and we support you. So
very good. Manipulism.com, that is the main website. We'll have links up on our websites, redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com as well. So check that out. All right. Well, Mikkel, let's stay in contact and let's have you back and talk more about this further ahead. Great to get to know you. Keep up the good work, my Danish brother.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'd be happy to be on your show another time.
That about wraps up for this time. We'll be back in just a few days with much more. We have upcoming Michel Merl on the Bok Saga. Very interesting and different oral tradition coming out of Finland. We also have a new Radio 314 this Wednesday, so heads up on that. All right, well, thank you for listening and for showing your support and keeping focused on the important issues. I hope you have a great rest of your day or evening, wherever you are, and stay strong. In the meantime, talk to you soon.